in the trees, a potential snare. Close my eyes and block my ears. Cut the cord and leave me here.
Welcome back to Phantom Island, presented by Homefield, Stephen Godfrey.
Hey!
I tried
to do a little talk radio energy there.
Hey! It's not how you feel today, I know. But
Q103.
I pushing through it.
Fine Young Cannibals. Okay, we got a little bit. How about the new Madonna? I don't know why I went
so
dated with that.
Did you work college radio at any point?
I did.
Okay.
WUMS.
Okay. I did not.
I hosted a cool... God, man. Ryan Nanny is maybe the best person at making fun of me, of Godfrey, like that I know of,
outside of your family.
Yeah. And I don't know, man. It's a close one. Anyway, if I could remember the name of the show I created for University Radio, I'm sure it would be awesome. Like in terms of making fun of me.
Oh yeah.
And I cannot. I'm not trying to hide.
I'll see if I can dig it up.
Yeah.
I'll see what
it's
I can.
It's WUMS, as in University of Mississippi. I can't figure out what the call. I think it was 92.1.
Okay.
You know what? I don't even think they have that stuff anymore.
Yeah, but I can...
Does college radio still exist?
I'm pretty sure it does.
Huh. All right, now,
that's
it's your job.
That's not what we're here to talk about.
It's your job to get us from a college radio anecdote to...
The subject of today's...
The National Basketball Association. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. We're going to get sued if I do that?
Did you watch the NBA Emirates Cup final game this year?
I only saw the highlights.
Okay.
My Atlanta Hawks were in it last year, a little bit more so. And I sort of learned about it last year by doing what I do in any sport that's not American football. I just ask the people I know in the media who know more about that sport.
Sure.
So a lot of our NBA mutuals, if you will, it kind of educated me up on the silliness and the fun, I think, of the cup. And, of course, my lasting memory, I just have to say this, even though I really like the New York Knicks, was last year when Trey did the dice on the logo in a cup quarterfinal in New York, because God bless him. I was happy. Now, here's the thing. In the other breath, same sentence. I like the Knicks a lot. I was really excited that they won.
Sure.
I was pretty fired up. I saw the highlights and I was like, oh man, like the Knicks are like legitimately good. This is great.
So we're not going to get into the full specifics of the NBA Cup today. I'm sure we'll do that at a later date.
Yeah.
I bring this up because the Knicks, shortly after beating the Spurs to win the NBA Cup, played the Indiana Pacers. Pacers not having a great year. That's not really relevant to this. They beat the Pacers on a buzzer beater three from Jalen Brunson, who happens also to be the MVP
of
the NBA Cup.
Yeah.
They held a lot of guys out for this game, or they put guys on very limited minutes.
For the Pacers game.
For the Pacers
Which game. Is a regular season NBA game that counts. And just so I'm super clear, the NBA Cup win or lose does not count against your win-loss standings in the regular NBA season?
The final doesn't. The other games do. Again, I told you we can't get too far down the rabbit hole.
Never mind. Okay, fine. I immediately regret asking that question.
All right, so the reason I bring this up is the NBA Cup, not specifically, but the schedule as... It's not unusual, is maybe how I should bridge us in here. It's not unusual to see an NBA team say, hey, we've just come off a long road stretch or a back-to-back or whatever, and so we're sitting guys who are ostensibly healthy. Did everybody who sat or was on limited minutes like have a injury designation of sorts attached to them? Yes. Nobody was just like, yeah, he's tired and he needs to just rest.
Okay.
But that ties into the larger question behind today's episode, a question that has been talked about for over a decade, and you can find drips and drabs of it going back even further, which we'll talk about a little. That question is this: should the NBA shorten its schedule?
Okay.
This is a thing that sometimes I think you and I get into discussions that are not necessarily unique to us, but the subject itself is maybe something that people aren't kicking around as actively.
Yeah.
This is not one of them.
No, this is just a normal sports topic.
Yes.
Maybe the most normal we've embraced so far.
Players, coaches, media, fans, fan media, like everybody involved has had a lot to say over whether 82 games is too many for the NBA to be playing.
Okay.
So we're going to start by setting the table a little bit for the listener who either is new to this discussion or has maybe just heard of it at a very 30,000 foot level.
So me, basically.
Sure. Well, I got to, when we were prepping for this episode, I got to tell you something that you didn't know, which is that every NBA team, 30 teams in the NBA, plays every other NBA team twice, at least.
Every year?
Every year. Once home and once away.
That was interesting to me, just because if you are a fan of a team and you live in another NBA city, you're guaranteed a home game.
Yes.
Technically, you're guaranteed the chance to see your team.
Yes. And
but the other thing that I asked after you were walking me through this, and yep. I said, well, how do they account for, like, don't you play your division more?
You do. That part is true.
Okay.
One of the problems I think that I have with that conceptually is that, at least in the way it works now, this hasn't always been exactly the case, but we'll just talk about the present. Divisions don't really mean anything.
I am on my phone right now.
Yeah.
I don't know the name of the division that the team I cheer for is in.
Do you have a guess?
I'm a casual. Well, now it's in front of me, but we are in the Southeast.
That's right.
I almost said the Atlantic.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Again, idiot man, believe me, if you have no knowledge of the NBA, I am your voice today because I have very, very, very little.
Right.
But none of this matters.
Right.
Because when the playoffs come, it's yeah. 1 through 8.
More or less, yes. It's
well, the play-in and all
right.
that.
Right. So it's 1 through 6 in each conference, ranked by winning percentage.
But it's not that, like in the NFL, if you win, if the AFC South is atrocious one year.
Yes.
You win and you're in. You win your division.
Yes.
Your record could be lower than other deserving teams. This has happened in the NFL frequently.
Yes. Division record is a tiebreaker, but that's all it is. It doesn't mean anything beyond sort of like, well, if we need to sort of like separate these two teams from one another.
Could I ask a dumb question?
Yeah.
Do people get like t-shirts that are like Atlantic Division champions?
Like, do teams hang banners for this stuff?
I mean, any of it. Like, in the NFL, if, as we record this, okay, I know the Eagles are going to win the East.
Sure.
Someone will have a t-shirt that says...
I'd be so mad if they blow it now, but go ahead.
I mean, that would be...
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah.
I've really spoken something into existence if that happens. You like, there's a banner for that, provided you don't go any further.
Sure.
And t-shirts that was like yep, or NFC memorabilia. East, you'd be sure. like, yeah, we won yep. the NFC East.
Right.
I don't know if I've ever heard of anyone in the NBA being like, hang on, we won the NBA Southeast. Is that a thing? I don't think it's a thing.
I suspect it is not. I suspect
four-time
it is not.
Pacific winning Pacific Division champion Phoenix. No one's ever said that.
I mean, I can tell you. All right, so I can tell you to go back to the NBA Cup conversation. One of the questions that came out of the Cup was, are the Knicks going to hang a banner for this? It is a championship. I'm air quoting very aggressively here, but it's a very specific kind of championship.
It's a weird one.
According to, like, the reports so far are that, no, they're not going to do this. They are
really?
They're going to have some sort of celebration, but they're not going to hang it. But in the reporting around that, it has been noted that the last banner the Knicks hung that wasn't like Billy Joel or Harry Styles plays a bunch of concerts here or whatever was when they won the 2012-2013 Atlantic Division title.
Hey, there we go. Okay, all right.
So in theory, yes, but what it means is certainly degraded in a very serious way. But the way NBA scheduling works, you do play your division mates more frequently than you play the rest of the conference, the other conference itself.
Yeah. Do you know how I know that Nashville is a better city than New York?
How do you know that?
Because our arena has a banner for the number of times Garth Brooks sold out.
Mm.
And theirs has one for the number of times Billy Joel sold out.
Mm-hmm.
And I am empirically superior for living in the Garth Brooks.
Okay, I think that's fair. It's certainly a matter of taste.
No, it's just a fact.
True.
It's
okay,
just a fact.
Gotcha. Now, I will say, divisions most of the time do make sense from a scheduling perspective because they are much more so than they are in other sports, by and large.
Yeah.
They're very geographically oriented. So the Southeast teams in the NBA are actually in the Southeast, yes, in the Eastern Conference.
And this is going to sound like I'm trying to be mean or ironic or something. I think that's great because there are a lot of asinine structured divisions.
Yes.
Don't get me started on college.
The Western Conference has its own problems, but that really just has to do with like the geography of the United States.
Right.
And that we have more teams in the East teams are clustered more efficiently, more effectively.
Yeah.
Together than the West teams are.
I mean, I'm looking at the West right now, and nothing jumps out as heinous.
Right.
I know there's some time zone issues a little bit, but maybe Oklahoma City could probably clump in more with those Texas teams in the Southwest.
Right.
But I don't think, my God, as we record this, the Thunder have only lost two games. I don't think the Thunder really care.
We shouldn't.
How do they not play in the Cup Final? Jesus.
I don't think the Thunder care about the Cup Final, to be honest.
God, what a wreck. What a machine.
And divisions matter so little that most of the time, I think, when people are looking at the NBA standings, they're just looking at East and West Conference standings.
I am.
Because for purposes of making the playoffs, that really is basically all that matters.
So what I do the once every 2 weeks I might think to check the NBA standings during the season is you just click on playoffs on whatever app you're using, because that's all you really want to know. That's the larger context.
Right.
Okay. So you don't need to win your division.
So the way this works is every NBA team plays 82 games right now. I believe the format is you play the other teams in your division four times each. You have four other teams in your division, so that's 16 games. You play, then it's sort of like a little bit of a, it's a little bit of a mishmash. You play the opposite conference two times each. Those are 30 teams. So, those are 15 teams, so that's 30 games. So between those, you've got 46 games. Then you play the other 10 teams in your conference, the other two divisions. You play them at least three times, but some you play more than three times. It kind of rotates.
Okay, I just, as you were talking, I pulled up the Hawks schedule, and in December they have two home games with the Bulls, one on a Sunday and then on a Tuesday, both in the same city.
Yeah.
That seems like a hiccup.
Whether it's a hiccup or not is probably for somebody else to decide. There's a lot that goes into NBA scheduling that is much more complicated
Okay, and by the way, in January, they're doing the exact same thing on the road in Toronto.
Yeah. So it's less that I want to talk about, like, how does the NBA get to 82 games, and more that that number, 82, is the thing that is getting pushed back on and has been getting pushed back on for some time. Our intern, Ryan Fortune, helped with some of the research for this episode. He found this quote from Pat Riley in 1985. I guarantee the league would be more exciting and popular if we had a 60-game season with more time between games to promote and market them, with more meaningful games and with the players getting more rest between games. Our product would improve overall. In 1985.
You think he was smoking when he said that?
It's entirely possible. Pat Riley was in charge of a very, very successful, very popular team in 1985 in the LA Lakers, the Showtime Lakers.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, believe me, I thought of Adrian Brody when you said that.
Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
Not real Pat Riley.
Not actually Pat Riley.
Yeah.
So that enters us into this debate that I would say has been simmering pretty actively since about 2014 or so. 2014 is when both LeBron James and Dirk Nowitzki come out and sort of say, the number of games we're playing is a lot. Like, players think it's too many. There's too many back-to-backs, which is when you have to play on consecutive nights.
Sounds like a bunch of weak millennial complaining.
And that we should approach this from a different perspective. And we should figure out, like, how can we cut the number of games and do so in a way that just makes player longevity better and makes for the regular season games themselves better, so you don't have issues like load management. You may have heard the term load management.
Yeah, load management is just minutes, right?
Yes. And we have load management in other sports too, like in baseball. You have to think about how long a pitcher is going to go.
It's also catchers now. It's become a big thing with catchers.
100%. in preseason NFL, I guess, is a form of load management, although it's really injury risk is what it feels like more than anything else.
No, philosophically, I mean, I'm there are certain coaching staffs that will not play a number one quarterback at all in the preseason, whether he may or may not need at least like a couple drives.
You'll see this in week 18 in the NFL frequently with the teams that already sort of like know what their postseason fate does or doesn't look like. This is a idea that is less popular with the older generation of the NBA. Specifically, I'm going to use Michael Jordan and Charles Barkley.
Oh boy.
Here's Michael Jordan on the topic after hearing what Dirk and LeBron had to say. I love both of those guys, but as an owner who played the game, I loved playing. If I wasn't playing 82 games, I still would have been playing somewhere else because that's the love for the game I had. As a player, I never thought 82 games was an issue. Are they ready to give up money to play fewer games? That's the question, because you can't make the same amount of money playing fewer games. Okay. A very Michael Jordan response.
Very.
Especially because he was, at the time, I believe he was a Wizards owner at this point.
Maybe it's good to, like, any
or
conversation.
A Hornets owner, rather.
Same thing. Yeah. It's fine. Look, all those teams in the Southeast are. Don't get in a kerfuffle about it.
Okay.
I think it's good to maybe put a caveat in anytime we discuss Michael Jordan in modern context, which is that, yes, this is the greatest player in basketball history.
Yeah.
Yes, at my age, this was the person who, like, basically introduced me to the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
I was 12 in 1993, mm-hmm. and that was the first finals I remember watching. So with all that being said, he's the greatest of all time. I know the NBA is big on that kind of superlative argument. This is maybe the celebrity most in need of therapy I've ever seen. I watched all The Last Dance, and I'm not a basketball fan. So I totally would expect Michael Jordan to say that, comma, however, maybe not the basis from which we should start developing any kind of model of HR.
I will say Michael Jordan's career certainly backs this up. If you look at his games played and games started with the Bulls specifically, it's a little different when he comes back at age 38 to play for Washington. Outside of injuries his second season and the year where he missed most of the season because he was decided to unretire very late,
mm-hmm.
you are talking about at least 78 games played every year, most of these 82. Like, and these were years where, like, the 95-96 Bulls.
That's regular season, by the way.
Yes.
That doesn't include the 2-month-long postseason tournament.
Right. The 95-96 Bulls went 72-10, one of the best teams in NBA history.
Yeah, they're amazing. I remember that.
And Michael Jordan played in all 82 of those games. And just from the perspective of, like, what did the Bulls strategically need to do to, like, make the playoffs, have the one seed, etc. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure they didn't need Michael Jordan to play all 82 games. But I 100% believe that Michael Jordan was like, if there is a game and at least one of my legs will let me, I'm getting out there.
Yes, again, not going to argue that. Just wouldn't build a basis of, like, decision making and maybe human relations off of, like, I've seen enough from Michael Jordan to know that that man is a definitive outlier. And if the modern athlete, also, you know, like, a lot has changed in the physical player development in the time in which Jordan was at his peak. So, I'm just going to lob this one up.
Yeah,
belt high. What did Charles Barkley say?
I'm so glad you asked. I'm so angry at the NBA for not telling these guys, wait a minute, we're paying you guys $30, $40 million and you can't play basketball 2 days in a row? I think it's a travesty.
Oh, boy.
For what it's worth, and this is really just a function of injury, not effort or interest, Charles Barkley had a harder time putting in the kind of game numbers that MJ did.
Yes.
Early in his career, you know, as a young player in Philly, like, played, with the exception of a couple of seasons where he only played in the, like, mid-60s, was showing up for at least 75 games, frequently 80, every year. Phoenix, that starts to dip, and you see that, like, 65, 66 a little more. And then in his mid-30s, when he gets to Houston, 53 starts, 41 starts, 40 starts, and then 18 in his final season.
Okay.
That was a lot. That was largely because of injury concerns or injury issues at that point.
But
he
has,
had back
has
problems,
anyone,
you know, et cetera.
And how old was? What year is? How old is he? His first year in Houston.
He's in Houston. He's 33.
Okay. So as you're sort of over the north, you know, over the north side on the back end.
Yeah.
Has anyone posed to Sir Charles that maybe load management could have actually increased his overall playing time because it could have prevented injury?
To give you,
I'm also tempted to ask, what was Charles's weight when he got to Houston?
Sure, sure. To give you a modern comp, LeBron James was 33 in his second stint with Cleveland when they won the title in 2017-2018.
That's crazy.
So that's like what he does before
this
anything
very long LA.
LA
run.
Anything we've seen in LA. And
with
indeed,
one asterisk title.
In the 2017-18 season, LeBron James appears and starts in all 82 games. Sorry, I should note, this is not the year they won the finals. They lost the finals. They did lose the finals.
As we record this, the Lakers have never won a title with LeBron outside of the COVID bubble, correct?
Yes, that is true. Okay. It's the 15-16 Cavs that beat the Warriors, but...
Some are calling them the Coastal Carolina of NBA champions.
The 17-18 Cavs did indeed make it to the finals. They got swept by the Warriors that year. I don't need finals completionists coming for my throat on this.
God.
Okay. So that sort of sets up the argument that we're going to have. And and what I think we can sort of... I want to actually kind of remove the Barkley-Jordan perspective of this because I think it's a little bit of a red herring. Or I think it's important, but it's not what's actually driving this.
This just in, previous generation thinks current kid's too soft.
Yes, 100%. And... it's not that I'm not even interested in sort of like litigating whether they're right or wrong. I think I am more that perspective is not why the NBA still plays 82 games. I don't think NBA
money.
Owner is sort of, yes.
Yeah, it's just money.
Yes. It's money in a couple of ways. So we're going to talk about the cons of what cutting the season would look like.
By the way, how?
Yeah.
We're cutting the season. It's 82.
Yeah.
What are we cutting it to?
That's a great question. This is a thing that, like, I have not seen at least anybody put forward a real firm proposal and say it should be X or Y. For our purposes, let's be somewhat modest, and let's say it's going to be 72 games. We're only going to cut 10 games.
We're going to cut 10 regular season games.
Yeah, which is, in the case, most teams are playing about somewhere in the neighborhood of, like, 14 back-to-backs. So we would be going to the NBA and sort of saying, like, hey, you're going to have back-to-backs, but you're going to have one a month. They're going to be pretty spread out.
Okay.
Or one every couple of months, really.
Yeah.
So you're going to have two before All-Star break, two after. We'll sort of like do them thoughtfully. By and large, you're not going to play on consecutive nights.
Love it.
So let's start with the arguments that are trotted out for why this would be a bad idea. And Michael Jordan did allude to this. He said, you know, if you do this, there's going to be less money. And therefore, you're going to make less money.
Yeah, but I don't. Yeah, I know you're going to point this out. I don't believe that claim outright.
I think it bears. It is worth scrutinizing for sure.
Okay.
I want to talk first about the NBA's television contracts because that is, you know, the main way that I think we're going to think about NBA revenue. The biggest difference between the NBA and the NFL from a broadcast perspective is that when the NFL goes out and sells the regular season to the three major,
are you counting streamers? Because it's like six now.
Yeah, okay. All right. To the myriad of parties.
I'll put it this way. There is not a large American telecom that is not involved with the NFL, and that's not a coincidence.
That's fair. So when they do this, they are selling all regular season inventory at a national level. That doesn't mean that every game is available nationwide, except obviously it is on, why can't I think of the name of it now?
Streamer?
No. No.
Peacock.
No. Sunday Ticket.
Go 90.
Sunday Ticket is Go the 90. Thing I was thinking of. You're not helpful.
Go 90.
Nobody wants to hear about Go 90.
Quibi.
You of all people know that. the NBA is not selling the same thing to NBC or Peacock.
Although there is League Pass.
There is League Pass, but League Pass is a different thing.
One of the strangest things I did before I entered into a marriage was I lived with someone who insisted on buying NBA League Pass. And let's just say we were in a phase of our life where that was an extravagant purchase to watch Kevin Durant's rookie season with the Sonics. And we had to watch that whole fucking season.
So the NBA just signed, I believe, in 2024, in the summer of 2024. This is the first season we've been under it, if memory serves. About a $77 billion deal with NBC, Amazon, and ESPN.
Yeah, and NBC by extension. I think some games get siloed to Peacock.
Right.
As long as they, by the way, as we record this, Peacock is still an app. That's not a joke.
Sure.
There's a ridiculous amount of tumult going on in the streaming space.
Right. Within that deal, about 75 regular season games were set to be put on broadcast television each season. Now, okay. Think about that in comparison to the NBA, or to the NFL, rather. Every NFL game is on broadcast television. It may or may not be in where you are, depending on like how the broadcast map shakes out, especially for the 1 o'clock games when they're all clumped together.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not like hidden on some local network.
There are no RSNs.
Yes.
So RSN stands for Regional Sports Network.
Yes.
Most of you listening shouldn't really need any further explanation. But the NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball specifically sort of form the inventory base for regional sports networks. Regional sports networks have also basically, I don't want to say they've imploded, but their revenue model has been greatly affected. A significant number of them are owned by Sinclair, which is a conservative broadcasting company. The NFL gets to just step past all of this because I think the clearer way to say this is that technically a national broadcaster has the first rights to every NFL regular season game, and that is not the case for any other major American sports league.
Correct. So let's take NBC, NBC slash Peacock, for example. The portion of this that they own, they get to 100 regular season games as part of this deal.
Okay.
About half of them, a little over, they put on NBC. They put the rest on Peacock. Some they put on both. But my point here is that the NBA is not selling within this $77 billion deal every game it has, such that if you reduce the overall number, you would say, oh no, all of these games, all 82 for every team, are promised to these titans of broadcasting.
Right.
They're already getting to pick and choose and saying, okay, I run NBC. Here are the 100 games I want.
Yeah. And Hawks Hornets is probably not going to be on there.
Sure.
But Hawks and Hornets are going to play a good bit.
Right. So I kind of push back on this idea of like, oh, well, if you do this, you're going to kill the TV contracts, because at least for these big national deals, they're already getting to cherry pick.
Yes.
And I think the flip side you are potentially offering them is the idea that we're going to give you, at least theoretically, games with better star power. We're not going to give you Knicks, to use the previous example, you're not going to get a Knicks-Pacers game where you have notable players sitting out for both sides. You're going to get what you get in the NFL, which is anybody who's available to play. Like, when the NFL has players missing games on national broadcasts, it's because they're out. It's not because they're resting.
So with 41 home games for every team every season right now, you said 72 games are selected by the top end of that TV agreement?
NBC gets to pick 100 of... Yeah, NBC gets to pick 100 of them. Amazon, I think, gets to pick 66.
Okay, so we're at 166.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm trying to see what the other number is. Okay. I can't find it here. Anyway,
it doesn't really matter, because here's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
There are over 1,200
regular season NBA
home games.
Yeah.
So diminishing that, and I can't do the math off the top of my head, but it's like, if there's 1,200 games available, if you cut 10 per team, I don't know how many teams there are in the NBA.
You'd only be cutting five per team, because...
Five per team. Oh, yeah, that's right, sure. Home and home.
Yeah. You'd be cutting 150.
Let's just say dramatically, and I don't think this is the case. No, yeah. if I'm cutting 10, it would be far less than this. It would be something like 1,100 games instead of 1,200 games.
Yeah, sure.
Let's say it's 1,000.
Yeah, sure.
It still doesn't really matter. Let's say it's 1/6
from,
of them.
From this perspective, yes.
It still doesn't matter because the most significant form of revenue is your top-end TV deal.
Yep.
They are still going to select the creme de la creme.
Yeah, they're still going to want
also,
Celtics Lakers, the two times a year it happens.
Yeah, real fast. You're also not going to sully the quality of your inventory. We're only talking about the quantity.
Right.
You don't have to adhere to any scheduling rule if you don't want to. It's your league. In other words, what I'm saying is, if we were to cut 10 games from the season, and everyone surrenders 5 home games, basically,
yeah,
the NBA can still step in every year, similar to other sports leagues, and say, like, okay, well, What's the best throw right now? Because I certainly don't know. What is the best piece of like a matchup inventory that you could give me in the regular season right now? We just say the Thunder because they won the title.
Sure.
Or like,
yeah, okay. I would say it's not just because they won the
like
title.
Like Thunder Lakers.
Like extreme. No, it wouldn't be the Lakers at this point. I think you could make. Let's say Thunder Nuggets.
Really?
Yeah.
What a weird space for.
Well, Jokic is still doing amazing things and is a lot of fun to watch. And
apparently, he doesn't like the term "Jokmas," and everything that man says, I appreciate. Okay,
if you want, Thunder Spurs can be
here's
your
Christmas
choice instead.
Here's NBA Christmas where where the Hawks have never fucking played.
Yeah,
they trot out the actual valuable inventory.
Yeah,
T-Wolves, Nuggets, Rockets, Lakers, Mavs, Warriors, Spurs, Thunder. Cavs, Knicks.
Yeah.
You know what's funny about this, just as a quick aside? I'm not going to drag this out. Other than the Warriors, who have won 3 or 4 titles or something in the last 15 years and still have Steph Curry, is Draymond still there?
Yeah.
Okay. They're two games under 500.
You can tell how little he knows about the NBA, guys.
Fuck yeah. Well, you can see my face right now. They're two games under 500. This is what I want to point out, Ryan.
Yeah.
What's so funny to me is the NBA managed to schedule this out a long time ago for Christmas. They have all winning teams playing each other on Christmas Day. The NFL sometimes just can't find its ass with a fucking searchlight. Like, it's unbelievable how dumb the NFL Christmas Day schedule looks by comparison. Sorry, this is just an aside. Like, the Cowboys and Commanders are both sub 500, and they're going to start the NFL slate that day.
Do you know part of why? I'm so happy you brought this up. Do you know part of why Warriors fans and Steve Kerr think that the Warriors have struggled to this record right now?
Why?
In the first 17 games of the season, they had 5 back-to-backs.
Oh.
They, like, things will balance out, and that will not be, it won't be as bad the rest of the year.
Are they an older team now because, like...
That's part of it,
the
yes.
core is the core I remember that's, from winning all those
yes,
titles,
that's
right?
That's certainly part of it, yes. Yeah. And Steve Kerr has spoken a lot, and I believe he's even written a letter to the NBA.
Ooh,
about
a letter. That'll
about,
fix it.
Well, I mean, he's a little bit
hey,
of
the Rockets are good.
So I get why he's doing it.
Sorry.
This is
Now
this
I am
is,
getting distracted.
This is a real eye-opening moment for you. I get it.
No, it's just amazing to me that they were able to actually slot games with winning teams playing each other on a national showcase and the NFL, because it cannot stop tripping over its NFC East-sized dick, does this every year.
So Steve Kerr, you may remember, played on some of those Bull teams.
He sure
teams
did.
Michael Jordan. And he has talked about
how crazy Michael is.
He has talked about that, but not in this context. He has sort of explained why he has this view. And he said, I believe this was talking to The Athletic, quote, pace and space. When I played, you didn't have to run out to 30 feet to cover a shooter. Now you do. Back then, you played the game at a very small circumference. Now it's a big, wide circle, and you have to cover the entire court. Everyone is playing faster. That was to The Athletic in April of 2025.
So really what he's saying is it's about fresh legs.
Yes, and just what you are asked to do in an NBA game between teams shooting threes at a much higher rate than they were 20, 30 years ago, and teams running with more pace than they were.
Moving faster, creating more possessions
more
per
possessions
game.
More possessions per game.
Oh, my God.
It's just a lot.
Brett Bielema and Nick Saban were,
they were right.
Ryan,
right.
This is bad. Just this about, is going to injure people.
Just about the wrong
sport. Joking aside, I have, in my career, talked to a lot of strength and conditioning coaches, and they have talked about all sports, be it something as plodding as baseball, feature larger athletes than previous generations because – not because we're getting fatter. Americans, we are definitely getting fatter. But athletes are getting bigger.
Yeah.
Kids consume more protein.
Yeah.
Athlete, like, nutritional science has made massive
leaps
advances.
Leaps and bounds, yep.
So in the NBA's case, you have now told me we are running around the floor more. Yes. We are going up and down the floor more.
Yes.
The density of the bodies is more.
Because yes.
The weight and
sure.
The weight of these players and the amount of resistance training that they do.
Yeah.
And the amount of load on the body
yes.
has increased.
Yes. The of their own bodies, what they are stopping and starting and quick twitching is a heavier thing.
Man, does this now we're starting to sound like something I'm very familiar with,
yeah.
which is just simply what is the work life?
Wear and tear?
Yes. Like who's the plow horse in Animal Farm here? And I think this is, no, I'm joking, but yeah. Now I'm getting to understand like, these basketball players are a bunch of babies. No, it's like, these are different physical bodies than they used to be.
Right.
And I definitely know enough as a layman to understand like the three-pointer was our friend Mike Prada, right? He wrote a whole book about
yes,
it, about
yeah.
how shot structure has changed.
Yeah. How the courts have stretched, basically.
Okay. So I feel like I'm on Kerr's side with this.
And we're going to get back to that because that's in the pro category of the argument for why we should shorten the season. I want to conclude the TV argument very briefly here.
Okay.
So my pushback is the contracts you're negotiating wouldn't be significantly different, and I think you'd be able to say with greater confidence the stars will be there more often than they are
yeah.
now. The NBA in January of 2024 published a report where they looked at the increasing number of games that stars were missing, specifically stars, which they said were players who were all stars or are all NBA selections in their recent history mm-hmm. in the season that we're talking about. And that found that if you looked at the 1980s, stars missed about 10.4 games per season. And in the 2020s, that had jumped to 23.9 games per season. So yeah. The NBA does understand that like absence is a thing where they, and we'll get back to, they dispute sort of like the cause and effect of it all. But from a TV perspective, I think you could say a smaller season, a shorter season, a season with fewer games would more consistently put stars on the court.
Yes.
The other part of the lost revenue argument is that NBA games themselves make money as events. I think one estimate I saw is that the average, it's market dependent and, you know, arena dependent and things like that. But a team can generate as much as $5 million in revenue per game. And so if you took away 10 games, you would be telling some teams like, hey, here's $25 million. And for some teams, that might really eat into their ability to turn a profit, how much they invest in the team, this, that, you know, however you want to interpret it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of things I want to push back on there. Number one, revenue to me always feels like a sneaky term to use because it's not unless it's sort of like called out specifically, it's not a net.
It's not profit.
Yeah. It doesn't account for the costs that you have to have. Like
mm-hmm.
every time you turn on League Pass and you're like, man, there are 2,800 people watching the Pelicans struggle mightily.
2,800
might be generous. On a Wednesday
yeah.
night. It costs money to, what is Smoothie King, I believe?
Smoothie King Center, baby.
It costs money to have Smoothie King Center open and operating and have security and concessions. Like,
yes.
There is operating costs to
so
all
this,
of this.
This was the part when you walked me through what we were going to do today
yeah.
where I know a lot.
Yes.
Because my time in pro wrestling, we worked with arenas and buildings and sometimes even theaters or, you know, smaller event spaces. And the simplest and fastest way I can explain this is when you sign on and you don't own the building, you are borrowing the building. Ryan, I'm going to have a party in your house. When you go into Ryan's house, there are fixed costs associated with using Ryan's house.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not as simple as like an Airbnb
right.
concept.
Right.
It is, well, we have this much security.
Yep.
We have this many concession stand workers,
yep.
this much electricity.
Yep.
This much
water,
et cetera.
Yeah.
There's probably a fee if you're in an NHL arena on ice protection or
mm-hmm.
like putting the boards over
ice
the ice and all that stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a real thing.
Yep.
And it's so funny because I had the exact same seat when Pearl Jam came through Atlanta and Nashville, the same seat in two different arenas, and everything had to be structured differently in Nashville because it was still hockey season.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also colder where I was sitting, and like
right.
they have to take care of that damn ice.
Yeah.
And it's not cheap.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have all this stuff. We got to pay for all these things in a building.
Yep.
The reason you can lose your ass in live entertainment is that if you pick the wrong building, it can essentially swallow any idea of profit if you don't have enough bodies come through the door. Now, the kind of the entertainment business that I worked in is more similar to like concerts. So we, as the promoters, if you will, are trying to make an overall number on X amount of dates for a tour.
Mm-hmm.
Wrestling works in perpetuity. It's a little bit different, but we do segment out by quarters. Like these, we call them legs. It's different for the NBA and the NHL. Sometimes also the team owners own the arena. So
yes.
The example I know the most about is here in Nashville, the Predators own Bridgestone Arena, which helps the hockey team even when there's a concert.
Yeah.
Okay. The priority for everybody involved is a little bit different. If you're an NBA franchise, and let's just say you don't own the arena that you're in, one bad, boring Tuesday night where your stars aren't playing, you don't necessarily have a huge team coming in on the road that has a national following, like the Thunder or the Lakers or the whatever.
Yeah.
It's not the end of the world because you're making it up in the aggregate, right? I learned this from talking to people who worked in hockey. And also, like, we live in a hockey expansion city. I don't care how old the franchise is. We're in the deep south. It's hockey. It's weird. There were a lot of nights where a southern team on a weeknight in a smaller city compared to, like, New York or wherever was hosting, like, Edmonton or something like that. You're not going to make a lot of money that night. But
right.
In the NHL, they think in terms of their entire season, the same way the NBA does.
Right. They sell a lot of tickets that are based on the entire season.
Right. But if the Red Wings or Rangers would come to Nashville, the place would be packed and hopping, or eventually your team gets good and you're packed and hopping because you're the draw.
Right.
I push back a little bit on this idea of lost revenue because I'm being like very friendly about all the people involved. Most like more and more often you're seeing ownership stake from the franchise in the building.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is why everybody else is going to pay rent to you.
Yeah.
I think I'd be willing to bet that if you shaved 5 home games out of the Staples Center in LA, it's not called that, it's Crypto. Did they lose that name? I always like to derail Ryan's shows.
It is still Crypto.com Arena.
Feels like that's going to expire, doesn't it? Matt Damon. All right. Maybe something as large and as well trafficked as like LA or New York's not the example here.
Yeah.
But in another city, let's just say Dallas and the Mavericks for a second, okay? And this isn't an issue with trading away your best player. If you lose 5 home Mavericks games, one, in that building, you still have the stars.
Mm-hmm.
So you have another sports team. Dallas is like the 5th or something biggest metroplex in the city, or 4th, I don't know anymore, whatever. It's a top 10 city in America. What I do know about the live events business and having to also bid against other shit going into a building and being like, can we stick? Because we were the number 2 wrestling promotion in the country. So it's like, all right, we're going to get in this arena, but oh, damn it. Like monster trucks are in town.
Yeah,
we can't book that. Oh man. Like, do you know, Menudo fucked us up a couple times. Like Menudo, I think those dudes are like 95.
We can't go. Rodeo's there.
Hey, as a quick aside to an aside, the only reason the Astrodome is not blown up and still stands is because of the rodeo.
Yeah.
It makes all the money you need to get the Astrodome standing in one event. I think as a building owner, if you cut the right 5 home games.
Sure.
And this is where I go back to the schedule being
important.
It's like, don't cut a crucial game.
Yeah.
But if you cut the right games, I think you could make as much money just putting 5 other events in there than you would with 5 NBA games. Where I might be wrong is a smaller market, which the NBA has a few of.
Yeah.
Oklahoma City, Portland, Sacramento. I'm naming cities off the top of my head that don't have any other pro teams.
Mm-hmm.
San Antonio.
Orlando doesn't.
San Antonio is, I think, the 4th biggest city in America now. So
Orlando has a soccer team, but doesn't have any other.
Right.
Yeah.
So maybe in those markets, it's possible. It's just funny as I told the story, I remembered something. So when I was at TNA, before we signed Hulk Hogan, he found enough money, he thought, to put on his own pay-per-view event, did it from the FedEx Forum where the Grizzlies play, and they sold 1,100 tickets.
Hmm.
The promoter was completely underwater on that event.
Yeah, it seems bad.
Bust. Now, if you did that in the right size building, you might be able to turn a profit on 1,100 sure. tickets. Guess sure. what? Oh, man, they did not. They did not. Okay, back to the NBA.
Okay, so the last sort of revenue thing you might think of is like, well, you know, if I'm a season ticket holder and I'm used to getting 41 games and now I'm getting 36, surely they're going to cut. No. Like, just maybe I'm too cynical and too cold-hearted. I am confident that every NBA team told that your season ticket package now covers 5 fewer home games would not cut prices by a dime. I think they would say, you're going to get better games and yeah. stars are actually going to show up. And also, fuck you, because we don't give a shit about you and we're just going to, whatever the price was, you know what our gift to you is? The price will remain flat. We won't raise it. You're welcome.
This is where, and I know we're kind of jumping from con to pro.
Yeah.
Scarcity drives value in so many ways.
Yeah.
If you... I don't know if what I'm about to say is heresy for NBA fans. If you trim the inventory a bit, the value of the games, in my opinion, would jump significantly.
Yes. We're going to get into that idea in a little bit here. Before we do, we're going to hear a little bit from our friends at Homefield. This episode is coming out the week before Indiana and Miami play for the national championship. And if you go to Homefield, you can, in fact, find plenty of gear for both of those teams celebrating their current playoff run and their past moments of glory. And yes, Miami has more of those in football, but Indiana is way better in men's soccer, considering Miami doesn't even field that program. But if you are neither Hurricane nor Hoosier, Homefield is still here for you with all kinds of stylish and comfortable crewnecks, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, hats, jackets, and more. Georgia State, Arkansas, Syracuse, Oklahoma State, Charlotte, Purdue, UMass, Colorado State. You all finished at the very bottom of your conference this year, very far indeed from playing for a national title. And yet, I am here to tell you, you each have a beautiful collection at Homefield right now. Nowhere at homefieldapparel.com will you find the standings for this football season, which means you could just say they don't exist. Go to Homefield today and either embrace your successful year or lightly dissociate from it. I am not here to judge you, friend. Okay, back to the episode. All right, so let's jump back to the pro side of the column here. The most obvious answer we have trotted out is that more players would stay healthy or they wouldn't feel the need to rest, mm-hmm. and you would get a more reliable product both in person and on television. You would have confidence that for the one team, if you play in the East, the Lakers are going to come play you one time, only once. And when they do, you would have higher confidence that Luka's going to be there. You're going to get to see him play mm-hmm. live. You're not going to be burned, and NBA fans have talked about this, by, I bought tickets for this game, thinking this guy was going to play,
yeah.
and then they rested him.
This is very common in event marketing.
Sure.
And, you know,
it's been a big issue with Leo Messi and MLS, frankly.
No shit. Yeah, because they're advertising a thing. They're not advertising a team.
Right.
They're advertising
right.
either an occurrence or an individual.
Right.
This is very, very common. Again, right. in like live event marketing, people didn't say, oh, hey, the Lakers are coming to town.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron and the Lakers are coming
right.
to town.
Right.
That's how they sell the tickets.
Right. I think what you're getting at is that this would also make for a more interesting regular season.
I assume so, yes.
It
just means that if I were to flip by and see my team playing, it would have, 10% more impact.
Yes.
The outcome
yes,
would.
Yes. The games themselves would matter more. And, you know, that's interesting because I had Ryan pull some numbers from like a handful of random seasons. We have 6 seasons that we pulled basically from the mid-90s into modern day, more or less. And what I asked him to do was say, okay, take the final playoff standings at the end of the regular season and go back 10 games, 10-ish games. You can't do this precisely because not everybody's schedule works the same, but like go back roughly 10 games for everybody and tell me what the standings were there. Because part of, and Dirk Nowitzki has said this as well, part of the question is like, well, do you need 82 games to effectively determine who should make the playoffs? Because that's part, like, we talk about the schedule in terms of like entertainment and money and health, but like the reason to have a regular season is to
suss out who's good, who's bad, and who should play against each other.
It's a filtering mechanism, yeah. Right. And there is an argument to be made, and I think sometimes we see this in, like, lockout-shortened seasons, that if the season gets too short, you don't do that as effectively, and you let and you don't actually get a sense of, like, where teams... Who should be in and where they should be seated?
Yes, I know baseball purists have a lot of feelings about the shortened regular season in 20.
So looking through this, like, okay, take a season, rewind it 10 games, see where everybody was when they'd played about 71, 72 games.
Yeah.
Just in terms of who gets in.
Okay.
In every year that we looked at, it was either the exact same... Or at most, you saw one team in each conference change. Usually the 8 seed
in the
was
10
different.
Games.
In the last
cutting.
10
okay.
games, in terms of just who got in.
Yeah. And there's a little bit of a scientific sort of error there. Maybe you cut the first 10, maybe you cut the last 10.
Sure.
What kind of variance would that create?
Sure, yes.
But I like the idea of cutting the last 10 because we have sort of couched this around the idea of fatigue.
Yes, yes. So it doesn't change at all who gets in. It can change seeding somewhat. There are some years where you can see, like in 2016, 2017, it changed it a lot. I think 7 of the East seeds moved positions in the last 10 games. 5 of the West seeds moved around. But then you have other years where it's like, okay, it's like a couple seeds here and there. And it's things like the 4 and the 5 moved.
Well,
they
I would assume,
spots.
But I would also assume, and again, I don't know if this is scientific error or not, like... Seeds 1, 2, and 3 probably have the shit wrapped up.
More often, that is the case. There are some years you can find where, like, 1 can drop to 3
yeah.
and it gets tighter.
Okay.
But even then, I would sort of argue, like, well, if we're just arguing that we need, you know, having these 10 games for seeding, if you added 10 more games and the season was 92 games, the seeds would move again. Mm-hmm. There is no point at which you can say with confidence, I don't think. I think it's more important that you get the 8 teams that you think should be in the playoffs in more so than, and these are the seeds they should definitely be at. Because anything you mess with in terms of the schedule is going to affect how they're seeded to some extent.
Gotcha.
So that makes me feel confident that you could take away, in our case, 10 games from the season, and you really wouldn't be futzing with the outcome. Like we talked about way back on an episode about bubble titles, we talked about the Dodgers championship in that bubble season when played almost no games. And I think that was, I don't think that like takes away from their title necessarily, but it does feel weird when you're like, wait a second, what a baseball team is expected to do over the course of a season was not what you had to do. And therefore like, it just, I don't know. It leaves a weird taste in your mouth, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I look back on that maybe differently and just say like, well, that was all they could do.
Yes, 100%.
You wanted to have a champion. We didn't have a champion in 94, so it's like, do you want to do this or not? It's like, this is probably the best. And they expanded the playoff that year because they had fewer data points.
Yes, I think mostly, I don't think the takeaway there was like, oh, I guess we only need 50 games or whatever for a baseball season should be this short.
It is weird to say like the Miami Marlins won a wild card that year.
Sure.
It's like,
right.
No, like we trotted out some warm bodies and played a couple 3-game series.
Right. So that's sort of, I think we've sort of laid out sort of how this works and how this doesn't. There is one thing we've left lingering here, and you brought it up earlier, and that's RSNs. An interesting thing is happening right now with RSNs in the NBA, which is to say that some teams have sort of gotten away from them altogether.
Yeah.
They have said, we're not going to do a local broadcast deal. We're not going to be part of the FanDuel network, whatever it is at this point.
Yeah.
And they're doing the more
Diamond
like...
Diamond or whatever.
They're doing the more like, hey, sign up for Hornets Plus. I don't know if Hornets Plus is real, but something like that. Like,
it is now.
We're going to do a digital streaming thing and you can sort of buy into it this way.
That's what I do actually now.
The NBA is rumoredly looking into sort of a like big... It's kind of like League Pass in some ways, I guess you would say. But they're talking about building a national streaming RSN that would cover something like 20 teams that could opt into it.
My God, this is tier 3 rights in college
sports.
Yes,
yes. Yeah. I don't get the sense that this is also something that like the value of it significantly swings depending on whether we cut these games or not.
I did not see your list before we made this show. Yeah. I would have told you to cut this section. You know why?
Okay. Why?
RSNs are not going to exist in 10 years.
Okay. I think that, yeah, and they are, they have been...
They are limping to the grave.
And the amount that they contribute to team revenues has been at best flat over the last few years.
It's because they're built on cable revenue.
Yes.
This past year, the largest provider, which was under the corporate, this is not the team that owns it. They're selling the name of the RSN, right? So it was Bally's. Some of it's FanDuel now. So like I purchased for $50, Ryan, 50 American dollars. I not only purchased 130 of the 162 Braves games, I also got access to, during that time period, all the Hawks and Predators games because just of where we are on a map.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it determined it, via Amazon, which was struck a deal for $50. Yep. Here's why that's important. They used to make so much more money off of this year-round as an RSN in the traditional locked cable bundle method.
Yeah.
So much more.
Yeah.
They're selling pennies on the dollar versus what they used to be able to get. And the NBA is not alone. The NHL is looking at Major League Baseball is looking at it. We could probably do a baseball episode because RSN revenue is one of the reasons that like the Dodgers became a behemoth.
Yeah, right.
So I don't even think this will matter. In 10 years.
It's certainly evolving in a way that I think caring about what it is now is foolhardy or short-sighted at the very least.
If you can pay $50 for the entire inventory of a season like that, it's just not it's not going to be viable revenue models in the next couple years.
I think the biggest sort of impassioned argument that real NBA fans have put forward who think this is the answer is that this is the only way to make basketball matter again for most of its calendar. Like that the way we're operating now, and the NBA has taken some steps to sort of say, like, for instance, you got to play 65 games if you want to be eligible for postseason awards. Can't win Rookie of the Year. Can't win MVP unless you've played 65 games. So they're
65 out of 72?
Out of 82.
82. Oh, sorry. 72 became my
72 is our theoretical number.
How did they arrive at that number?
I don't know exactly where they got, how they got to with it, but it
is. So 79% of games.
Yes. Yeah.
Seems arbitrary, but okay.
It's probably just the cleanest way they could get to 80% if I had to guess. But
okay. Yeah. Seems dumb, but okay.
They are certainly attempting. And I should say that they have pushed back on the notion that the season length is the problem. Joe Dumars, who's the who at least in 2023 had to say when he was working for the NBA as head of basketball operations, had this to say: "We are really emphasizing that this is an 82 game season. I think it was a given conclusion that the data showed you had to rest players a certain amount, and that justified guys sitting out. We've gotten more data, and it doesn't show that resting, sitting guys out correlates with lack of injuries or fatigue or anything like that." So the NBA says, according to numbers it's had run, that rest doesn't actually solve any problems.
That's insane.
Whether or not they're right, I think the season being the length that it is not working for all parties. It is creating situations where
rest does not prevent injury.
That's what they claim that their reports showed.
That's the dumbest officially endorsed statement about athletics that I've heard in 10 years.
It's a bold
and the
claim.
Last one was an Art Briles looked me in the face and said that stretching actually wasn't good for you.
Okay, good to know. I don't think the NBA necessarily wants
hey,
to
man,
that
hey,
company,
man,
but who's
you ever see a cheetah stretch? Nope.
No. I think they probably
you
do,
just
actually.
See it hunt.
So that's sort of the overall landscape that we are dealing with here. Where do you want to take this from here?
I'm going to be honest. Like, we can compare it to other sports because I think the interesting thing is like this: we're seeing a creep occur in other more lucrative sports, like namely football. I'm gonna be honest, we can put a pin in the debate. I know other like other shows and other media outlets have talked about this. I feel like 72 might be better.
Okay.
I would also like to point out, as I pointed out to you when we were going over this show, as a casual to sometimes non-NBA fan, depending on the circumstances of the particular season, the postseason feels interminable.
Yeah.
Not the process of it or like the quality of it. It's just the calendar is fucking big, dude.
Yeah.
So chopping off 10 games out of the regular season, like I understand how money works. They're not going to diminish the postseason when people are actually tuning in to anybody playing.
Yep.
So let's maybe cut here to help the calendar. If you start comparing it to other sports, I am convinced that the NFL is not going to sit at 17 games.
Yeah, 18 does seem like
18's coming.
It will happen, yes.
And the Players Association is probably going to be able to bargain down to fewer, maybe one even proper preseason game.
Yeah. I think it's entirely possible we also see another bye week added if we go to 18, which...
The funny thing about this, and it's not today's episode, is which direction do they expand the schedule? Is it earlier or later?
Well, I have my guess.
If they come for Labor Day, it's going to be rough on a lot of people.
That remains hard on a legislative level for them to do all the things that they want to play as many times as they want. But I do think earlier is when it's going to be.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll be later. But I think you're going to see some NBA-shaped problems if the NFL gets much bigger in terms of its regular season schedule. So the NFL, as it's been described to me, is basically a car wreck every 4 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? By ex-NFL players. So... The idea now of load management, it does exist. Like, touches on running backs is a real thing. Load management at the running back position in the NFL is a very real thing.
Sure.
It might become a real thing at other positions that are much more noticeable. Right now, we have this weird thing in America, as Americans, not right now, just historically, where the violence of our culture is so born in that we acknowledge it without any kind of a like emotional resonance. And so what I mean by that is like, oh, yeah, of course, like running backs... It's the most contact-driven part of this highly violent sport. We're going to need three of them.
Mm-hmm.
And not like, what could we possibly do to change the game? So that has been part of the zeitgeist for so long that who's the backup running back behind Saquon for the Eagles? Super Bowl champions.
Oh, Will Shipley.
Okay. If Will Shipley's out on a particular play, I mean out on the field, not out of the game, you're not shocked.
No.
Okay.
Sorry. It might be Tank Bigsby as well. I should throw him in there as well. But yeah.
How do
if to see either Bigsby or Shipley on there is it's not uncommon to be like, they got they each got 5 touches or whatever.
At a certain point, if we see it at other positions, people are going to start to notice and ask questions.
The biggest question mark position I think would be offensive line.
That's next.
Because I think that would be the hardest place to do this. Because, we see teams, it's not unusual to see wide receivers coming out on and off the field, including wide receiver one. Like you will see that rotation on defense. You'll be like, we're kind of doing something akin to like a line shift with the defensive line.
Yes, right.
Offensive line is the hardest place I think to sort of be like, time to rotate the guards or whatever.
All the shows we've done so far in Phantom Island history.
Yeah.
We've never once talked about the NFL failing at anything.
Not really, no.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm careful about how I'm going to propose. Doomsday scenario is not that.
Yeah.
We've talked about expanding the NFL into Europe, that the better option might be 4 teams instead of one.
Yes.
Spoiler on that episode.
Yeah.
And it feels inevitable that the NFL is going to creep maybe in both directions on the calendar.
Sure.
I mean, there's no reason they shouldn't own the entire month of February because it lies fallow now anyway. They could push the combine. They could shorten the draft window and or expand the draft into later in May. None of these things would bother anybody.
Right.
They want to own the calendar year round.
Yes.
What happens? Okay. I promise I don't take everything back to college football, but I work in one sport, but sort of specifically. Do you remember the comments that Pat Narduzzi made this season, 2025, when Pitt had a game against Notre Dame in November?
Yeah, I remember them because people...
You can basically paraphrase here.
Short version, he didn't care if they lost... He said he didn't care if they lost Notre Dame by 100. he did care. He wanted to win that game. But more or less
but
was
why
sort
did
of
he
explaining
that?
That, like, Pitt's path to the ACC championship and theoretically a playoff spot were not going to be impacted by playing Notre Dame, a non-conference opponent.
If we move to 18 games and we get closer and closer and further away from what the NFL we knew was, what's to stop a situation where you sit the quarterback?
Sure.
In the regular season for a significant amount of time. You mentioned something earlier about like sitting a starter after a season's done.
Yeah.
I've seen that happen. It almost always happens in the last week of the season.
Yes.
When I was unemployed after I actually got my college degree, I was living in my parents' house for 2 months, and I won tickets on a radio station to see a Saints-Falcons game in the Superdome. Last week of the season, they sat Vic. They started Matt Schaub.
Yeah.
And Aaron Brooks started for the Saints, I think. And like all the by halftime, all the Falcons ones were out.
Yeah.
Because the game had no meaning.
Yes, sure.
They had won the, I believe they had won the South, and they couldn't move up.
Yeah.
In the stands. That's understandable, if not unfortunate, for the inventory on one very valuable NFL weekend for television providers and advertisers and everyone who makes a dollar off of Sunday. Multiply that by three. It can happen.
Like, yeah.
The more we get into this, the more you think, like, all right, well, if I've got two or three AFC games in a row, and
yes.
I'm an NFC team, and I'm going to say something, and people are going to be like, no, that can never happen. What if it's a 20-game season?
Sure. Right.
There's nothing stopping the NFL from trying to expand. The right. PA will fight it to a certain level, yeah. But if the money's right, they'll also say
yes. But also, the NFL PA is not a particularly strong bargaining opponent at this point in time.
No. And also, if you go to 18 and add a couple playoff games and two preseason games, like, you're getting there anyway.
Right.
If you start load management at other positions in the NFL, this NBA conversation will be had like that.
The NFL conversation also gets trickier because it has the thing that the NBA doesn't have. So in the NBA, all your games matter the same. You need to you need to win. You need to be in the top 8, top 6, top 10, whatever, you know, however you want to think of it, in your conference if you want to be in contention to make the playoffs. In the NFL, because divisions get automatic seeds, that's not entirely true. And the more you would expand this, like, I'm presuming if we expand the schedule, we're not going to do it in such a way where you're playing more divisional games. You're actually going to be playing more non-divisional games.
No, they want the opposite.
And so,
if they were to increase in any way, shape, or form, in an iota of more importance on division games, you're going to see teams sack the other games,
right?
Rest up, which is why I brought up the Narduzzi thing, because
there's a balance to it. Because obviously, you know, you can't. It's only 6 games that you're playing. You can't put everything into those 6. But you can't, like, it does start to become a factor. And at the very least, even if it's not gamesmanship, look at the NFL games we have coming down the stretch here in the last couple of weeks. And it's not even necessarily so much that it's like, oh, these teams don't care or these teams are trying to be strategic. It's more like, oh, it's already a long season and guys are hurt. And so a game like Broncos, Kansas City
on Christmas
does not mean what anybody thought it would. And like, first of all, the Chiefs just got eliminated from the playoffs, but now you don't even get to see Patrick Mahomes play. Not happening. Injured. Out for the year.
Correct.
And I think the more you expand the NFL season, the more you would have not even decisions to sit, but just like, yeah, this guy's hurt. He's not going to. The longer you make the season, the fewer players will make it to the finish line. That seems like an inevitable conclusion. Or they'll have to do the thing you're talking about and say, we've run the numbers, and if you play 18 games, you're more likely to get hurt than if you play 16. So we got to find 2 to cut so that we can get you to the playoffs healthy and ready to go.
Which is, if you start to see healthy scratches at positions other than running back, people are going to notice.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's entirely possible.
So,
there's one reason, though, why I think the NBA conversation, to wrap us up here a little bit, there's one thing unspoken that I think is making it all very complicated. I think no business wants to say, we're actively going to give you less. I think the NBA, currently in a state of like, we used to be like pretty neck and neck with the NFL when it came to popularity, when it came to ratings, when it came to cultural impact. We know we've taken a step back. We're worried that we're going to continue falling further. And I think there is some concern of, like, if we do this, it feels like an admission of weakness.
You just walked us directly into a completely unprepared meta conversation about our own industry. And this is being felt across media, across entertainment, across sports, across every, because digital creates a faucet that never turns off.
Right.
And then the other effect is that everyone's consumption rate goes up and attention span goes down.
Mm-hmm.
So if I worked for a magazine years ago that put out either once a month or, like, let's say I worked for Rolling Stone, they put out 24 issues a year.
Yeah, sure.
I think it's 20 because they would, or like 22 because they would have a year-end bonus and a summer bonus. So 22 issues a year. And I was one of their main feature writers. I wouldn't have a cover story every month. I'd probably have 10 to 12 cover stories that I would labor on all year. So that's one a month. I might work on a couple other things. Maybe I might write a small review.
Yep.
Think about that workload now.
Yeah.
If I describe that workload to anybody working in music media today or any kind of entertainment media, mm-hmm. fuck no. You'd be unemployed. Oh my God, would you not have a job?
Right.
That's one quick off the rip example I can give.
Right.
You and I, when we decided to build Phantom Island,
yeah,
we didn't necessarily write scarcity equals value. Instead, what we said was, like, what can two dudes with five kids among them, like, carry without dying?
Yes.
And maintain their ambition.
And yes, that's the thing. And also feel like we are stretching ourselves and trying to do something that we feel good about and not sort of being like, how can we put out as much as physically possible?
Yes. Television shows used to have a mandate of being either 22 or 24 episodes a year.
Yeah.
There was a British model that worked in import when DVD started, and that kind of created a little bit of a push. The first one was actually that Sherlock miniseries. It kind of took fire. And then once streaming started, the concept of, like, well, you don't need 22, 46 minutes because it's not Downy commercials and Budweiser and stuff.
Right.
You're on streaming. It can be this fixed amount of content. Changed all that.
But the volume just, their inventory just shifted into something else. It
Correct.
Wasn't, okay, you're going to get picked up for 22 episodes. It's like, we have 200 shows.
How many minutes are you on platform?
Right.
The problem with the streaming example is then it became, the owners didn't say, give me your six best hours instead of your 20, instead of 22 of slop. They said, all right, Ryan, you give me your six best hours.
I have 100 other people.
I'm going
like
to pay you $5 million instead of $25 million.
Yeah.
And I'm also going to be able to develop a bunch of slop underneath it to keep you on platform.
Yeah.
All of this is getting at one thing, and this is maybe why I just come down on the side of shortening the season. It's a very weirdly American thing to constantly demand more.
Sure.
We never ask about quality. I'm not lapsed because that would imply faith at one point. As just always a milquetoast NBA fan by mm-hmm. virtue of the team that I got stuck with
yeah.
and their fortunes, but also just like, you know, I dipped in and out. Like I've told you before, you're a much bigger basketball fan than me. I didn't grow up with the sport. I didn't grow up around it. And I have little pieces and pockets.
Yeah.
Like every kid in Jordan, it was just inescapable
yeah,
in the
right.
90s. And then I've told you before, like, I like those Pistons. I like Ben Wallace.
Yep.
I like Sheed, which Ryan thinks is funny because I guess I like ruining a good time.
Hey, Sheed was very briefly a Hawk.
Ever. I love that jersey. You know, I remember the first time that the splash thing happened with Golden State.
Sure.
Like, that was fun to watch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just from the distance. All of this to me would be more accessible if when I hit upon an NBA game, it meant percentage more.
You knew what you were getting.
No, it just
oh, yeah.
There was more significance
okay.
to it.
Okay.
Before you get into the playoffs, I didn't say anything about shortening the playoffs on this episode. We're not advocating for that.
Yeah.
I understand how money's made. That's the second time I've said it. But what if we could just create a little bit more value by, God forbid, slimming down?
This is the most, I think, baseball fan perspective you have. Like, it is, I think it is challenging, in my opinion, to be a baseball fan and be like, I can watch my team lose five games in a row.
Yeah.
And it might not mean a goddamn thing.
Yeah.
I can watch my team win seven games in a row.
I don't know.
It might not mean anything.
Did I say this on the mic or before we turned on? I don't know how the hell we ever ended up at 162.
No, you didn't say it on
the
mic.
But I tell you one thing I can do is I can go on vacation for 2 weeks and not watch the Braves and come back and still be like, man, I'm in season. I missed 2 weeks worth of baseball. I'll listen to one of the recap podcasts. Right? Shout out, Brad. Shout out Lindsay. Shout out all those guys. I listen to so many Braves podcasts. And then pick back up.
An interesting thought experiment, which we're not going to do here because we're going to wrap this up. We look at seasons and we sort of like evaluate whether they should be longer or shorter based on what they are or maybe what they were in recent history. But I think it would be kind of interesting to sort of just say like, okay, tear it all down to the studs. You know you have 30 NBA teams. You know you want 16 of them to make the playoffs. Build a season. What does it look like?
What is the best path
yeah,
to that?
Like, yeah. What is the thing that makes the most sense just from a, like, we want this to be a compelling basketball league for everybody involved.
Don't make television the decider. That is about as unlikely as Michael Jordan going to therapy.
Phantom Island is produced by Michael Serber. Our theme song is also called Phantom Island from the album of the same name by King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. Thanks again for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.